At Mount Carmel, we care for every part of you, from simple checkups to complex surgeries and everything in between. With a team of primary and specialty care physicians, specialized nurses, and expert staff who not only help you get better, but help you stay well. Here, care is compassionate, personal, trusted. We provide care without limits so you can live that way too. Mount Carmel, more care for all of you.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, this week, Megyn Kelly said she'd still vote Republican if Donald Trump nuked somebody. Probably not her, but somebody.
Hey, Megyn.
A few months ago, the mother to a 15-year-old girl downplayed the seriousness of Jeffrey Epstein's pervert network targeting 15-year-old girls because it's not like they were eight.
She is precious.
Alyssa, what won't Megyn Kelly endorse in order to get attention?
I don't know. I feel like there's no depth too low. There's no bar too high. Like,
what if Trump threatened to nuke Megyn Kelly's daughter? Drop a bomb on her.
I don't know. Did her daughter deserve it? We'd have to ask her.
I mean, it's not like she's eight.
She's not eight. Do you know what I think about sometimes?
What?
Do you think that Charlize Theron wonders if she could get all those months of her life back having played Megyn Kelly in that movie?
Yeah. That wasn't great.
That was like the five minutes Megyn Kelly was a feminist hero. Exactly.
You do not need to hand it to her. I mean, Gretchen Carlson, I think, is way cooler.
She actually risked something.
She did. And she can play the flute, which is cool.
You know I can play the flute too, you know.
So can I. That's why I think it's cool.
Oh my God.
Today we talk about Trump's nuclear war threats. Tweeting them out. Congressman Tony Gonzalez's ongoing sex pestery, ICE's newest lies, Pam Bondi's ousting. Bye, Pam. Plus, why Republicans' gaggle of trad wives and trad caths can't escape the patriarchal system they champion. And as always, we wrap up with Sani Petty. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that is reviewing Cold War era videos teaching kids to get under their desks in order to hide from a nuclear threat.
You know that I am old enough that I had to do that.
You did?
Yes.
Did it ever occur to you, like, these desks, I don't think they're going to stop it?
Well, Erin, there were a couple of things. One, there was the get under your desk, and then there was the go into the hallway and put so you sit with your head in your knees and your hands over your head. I mean, it is amazing. Honestly, people wonder why Gen X is so fucking messed up. Between that and the shuttle, that was all second and third grade. Yeah. I have such vivid memories of second and third grade.
Yeah, that's a lot. You know what's funny? I really realized recently that people have different, like, safety drills in elementary schools. Like, when I was growing up, we had tornado safety drills, which sound a lot like the nuclear blast safety drills. I think they just repurposed them. I think they were like, well, we're already teaching them.
They were like all-purpose emergencies.
Right. We're already teaching them to go under their desks and, like, cover their heads and go into the hallway and, like, cover their heads. But I learned that people in California, I mean, why would they take tornado safety? They do earthquake safety here, where it's
that makes sense.
Right.
Do they go in doorways?
No.
What do you do in schools?
You're supposed to drop down, get low, grab onto something and hold on. So, like, get underneath the table and, like,
hold on.
Don't go into doorway. That's.
Do you know in elementary school, I had to be fingerprinted because the kidnapping craze was so wild that they brought us all to the high school gym, got our pictures taken, and we got fingerprinted and we got a balloon.
Oh, my God. I think that was the era of that young adult book, The Face on the Milk Carton.
Yes. I mean, every milk carton had a face on it.
Right. Like, but there was a very melodramatic young adult book about this girl who realizes, I think it's a girl who realizes that she was actually kidnapped as a baby by the people she thinks are her parents.
Yeah. It's a fucked up time to be alive.
Yeah. I mean, that was.
I mean, now is too, but
every time
that was especially traumatic.
You know what? As you age, as you live, you gain wisdom, you gain experience, you gain perspective, and you gain trauma. You just get them like.
It's true.
It's like an all you can eat buffet, and you're like,
gray
all right,
hair.
Well, yep. They're putting out the Jell-O salad. They're putting out the 9/11. They're putting out the Patriot Act. We're taking our shoes, the shoe bomber. We're doing all the stuff. Yeah, it's great.
Jell-O salads are making a comeback.
I saw
Yeah.
What?
Jello salads are making a comeback.
No.
Boozy ones especially.
Okay. I can get down with a boozy Jello salad.
I found a good boozy Jello salad.
Is it shaped old-fashioned? Something?
Yeah. It's like in a ring with the whole thing.
Okay.
And it's got two layers. And the top layer is like a Jello old-fashioned with the cherries in it. And the bottom layer is like amaretto and some sort of cream mixture that also turns into Jello. Honestly, it looks fucking delicious.
Okay. I'm sold. You know
who it is? You know Molly Yeh?
No.
She's like she's the Food Network star who's like lives on the border of North Dakota and Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, she was a judge at a Jell-O mold competition, and then she did this Jell-O mold, and I was like, girl, you live a good life.
That's amazing. Jell-O molds were such a staple of my childhood, not boozy ones.
No, but like,
I feel like Bill Cosby did a lot of damage to the Jell-O brand.
We were just talking the other day. Jell-O pudding pops were delicious.
They were so good, and now they can never exist again. They have to totally change them up because
Bill Cosby. But you're right. I do think that that was sort of the demise of the Jell-O mold.
He was the Jared Fogel of Jell-O. Although I think people still were like, you know what? If you are in a state of mind where you want to go eat at Subway, you're kind of like, well, fuck it anyway. Like, I don't fucking care. I feel like Jell-O requires some like planning. You go to the store, you pick it out, you mix it up, you put it in the mold. And the mold itself is like a harrowing, like when you're getting it out of the mold, it can go wrong. Yuck. So it's like, it's not just like, fuck it. I'll just have a Subway sandwich.
Emotional mayhem.
Yeah, I'm having my blood sugar is crashing and I need to eat or I'll fall over. What's the nearest restaurant? It's a Subway. Okay, cool. Right. I'll just get one of those. Jell-O is like, you're like, no, I'm not. I can't.
Not today.
I can't.
I shouldn't.
My favorite Jell-O memory, and I swear we'll get to the news, but we are talking about the Cold War and like nuclear threats or whatever. My favorite Jell-O memory is along the route of the Chicago Marathon, there used to be this lady that they called Jell-O Shots Ladies. I ran it a few times, like, you know, a decade ago. 2010 was the first one I ran. And Jell-O Shots Lady would show up around, like, mile 23. So mile 23, you are, like, running on fumes. And she just had, like, trays and trays and trays of Jell-O shots that she made in her own
apartment. Were they, like, electrolyte shots?
They were – no, actually, Jell-O with booze. They were Jell-O shots. Jell-O shots.
Wow.
And you know what is crazy is at that point in the race, you're not going to, like – fuck up your performance. I mean, it wasn't like elite marathoners were like, give me one of those. But like at normies that were running, that were just trying to finish, it's actually really nice because it gives you like a little bit of sugar and then like the alcohol hits your head right away and it takes the edge off because you're in pain at that
point. Yeah, for sure.
So it was like, perfect. Jell-O Shots Lady was like a living saint. And I think she was there the second time and I don't remember if she was there the third time, but she was amazing. But yeah.
Lovely memory.
Let it be known. I know the Boston Marathon is coming up in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
I have a friend who is going to run it. I learned recently she hopes to break 3 hours. I was like, it's like finding out that your friend has like flippers. If you find out someone can run that fast, you're like, what? You want to break 3 hours?
It's like when I met my husband and he told me he climbed Everest. I was like, what?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I was like, we're not the same.
But I think like if you live along the Boston Marathon route and you have the ability to make Jell-O shots and you're not going to get arrested for you should do it.
I made peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for the New York Marathon when I lived in Williamsburg.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Yeah, with a sign that said peanut butter, like nuts. You know what I mean? Like, just be careful.
Right.
But it is such a – but being one of those people who could never – like you running marathons is – top five, one of the most impressive things about you. So like when I would see the people running, I would be like, I'm not going to watch it on TV. I'll go out and bring sandwiches because that's like my contribution to their exceptional feat.
Yeah. When I watch like elite marathoners, I think about how fast they're running relative to how fast I'm able to drive in traffic. Like sometimes I'll be like on the way to work and it'll be like, okay, it's 7 miles left to get to your office and it's going to take you 40 minutes or whatever, you know, like because that's LA. So
totally.
It could take 40 minutes. It could take 20 minutes, whatever. I would be like, you know what? An elite marathoner could run
faster.
Be
there by now.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I don't think they could run 7 miles. No, they could.
They could.
Seven times. Yeah, they could. They could absolutely. Jesus, they're fast.
I'm picturing myself on the treadmill and I'm just like, I'm here for the good time, not the hard time.
Yeah. Not the hard time or a long time.
No.
All right. Well, we wanted to start off with some good news on that like blast from the past that took us through the world of Jell-O peanut butter marathons and Bill Cosby. The good news on Tuesday, Wisconsin, my home state, the Badger mm-hmm. state, did something pretty amazing. They elected another liberal justice to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and it was not even close.
Wipeout.
It was not even close. Chris Taylor is a liberal Wisconsin judge and former Democratic state representative. She won a 10-year term, expanding liberals' amazing. Majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court to a 5-2 split. I feel like if you are a liberal justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, you should be moonwalking into your office today. Just moonwalk everywhere today.
Great.
You can hold a follow through like you just sank a 3 and just like backpedal everywhere because...
Well, especially, Aaron, because if all of the justices currently on the Wisconsin Supreme Court finish out their terms, we're going to have a 5-2 split until 2030.
Yes. Yeah. And there's another Supreme Court election next year, but the liberal mm-hmm. majority is going to hold until 2030 if everybody serves out their terms. And this is another reminder about why this is so important. In 2023, the Ford 3 court ordered new legislative maps in Wisconsin, effectively ending GOP gerrymandering. And last July, the court overturned Wisconsin's 176-year-old abortion ban.
They're doing stuff, Aaron.
They're doing stuff. Also noteworthy, the last 4 judges voted onto the court have all been women. Chris Taylor, Jill Karofsky, Janet Protasiewicz, and Susan Crawford. So
that's great news.
It's pretty good. It's great news.
Go on, Wisconsin.
I do think that this is all a very long, extended fuck you to Scott Walker, the former governor
that
of
fucking
the state,
guy.
And failed a presidential candidate. Mm. I feel like Scott Walker was so hated by left-leaning voters, even like center-left people in Wisconsin. He fucked with like public sector unions. He fucked with teachers.
He fucked with the university system.
He fucked with the university system in a way that has not yet even been unfucked.
Right. Totally.
And it was like a crown jewel of the state, and he just like fucked it up. He's such mm-hmm. he is such a fucking putz and an asshole. And I feel like people in Wisconsin and Minnesota, Illinois, Midwestern people tend to not have explosive anger, but they tend to get they stay mad.
They remember.
Time. They remember. That's why Minnesota is not going to elect a Republican to statewide office for a generation. Because these
absolutely.
People in Midwestern states, if you fuck with them, they remember and they will not, they won't let it slide. You might think that they're letting it slide because they're nice, but they're not letting it slide. They're not letting it slide. Okay, now on to the stupid news.
Oh,
I'm realizing that I'm really sounding chipper this morning, and I think it's because we didn't go to war, like we didn't go into a like nuclear war civilization ending event yesterday.
Yes. Also, does it feel like everyone is starting to realize, even people who maybe aren't our friends and allies, that Trump is an absolutely pathetic, fucking stupid monster?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are realizing that. I think some of the people are realizing that publicly as a way to save face and give them a
For
place
sure.
to pivot to after Trump isn't here anymore, because everybody is very aware that he his life is finite. His brain is turning into a smashed Jell-O pudding pop before our very eyes. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a future without him, and people need to be able to detach from him and establish themselves as different. But
yeah,
on Tuesday morning, Trump said that a whole civilization will die if Iran did not agree to a deal by his Tuesday 8 p.m. Eastern deadline. Now, just 2 hours shy of his deadline, he announced that a ceasefire agreement was made on the condition that Iran would agree to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Israel is included in the ceasefire deal, but Israel has been like, no, we actually don't have to cease firing in Lebanon. Okay. I don't know if that's a full ceasefire deal, but whatever. Iran's Supreme National Security Council claimed this deal as a victory, saying they forced the U.S. to accept their plan. Remember the Iran nuclear deal?
Yeah.
We were in a better position.
Way better.
Then, before Donald Trump got rid of it, then tried to make a new one that was worse, and then declared war on Iran.
So much worse.
So now, like, I have to say this.
Go ahead.
We lost. This is
100%.
This is Iran's deal. We did not win. This was not a victory.
Not only did we not win— We like his one red line that he says is like the Strait of Hormuz has to be open. Well, now in February, the ships could go through. Now Iran's going to levy a fucking toll. Like, yeah. What is he talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. They should put worse and more expensive on the Trump family crest, because it's worse and more expensive. It's like now we're worse off. I mean, following the deal, oil prices did drop, but prices are going to remain higher than before the conflict began.
Right.
Because a lot of oil infrastructure was destroyed or turned off in a way that takes some time to reboot and get back online.
Right.
So Trump temporarily solved a crisis that he caused, and the solution is significantly worse than things would have been had he have done nothing.
So this is just a wholesale Trump-made mess that thus far has cost America like $29 billion, according to NPR Pentagon estimates, for what? Everyone fucking hates us now. Europe's like, go fuck yourself, you know? I mean, like Aaron, like the Strait of Hormuz could have been secured if Europe was on our side, but Europe was like, go kick rocks.
Mm-hmm. And it was all in exchange for opening the Strait of Hormuz again, which was something that on Tuesday night, it was announced that was agreed to. But as of Wednesday morning, now it's not sure that it's still open. Iranian media has reported that it's closed again. So we don't know if our ship's going through, our ship's not going through. Oil, not oil, power, not power, global economy, not global economy. It's all up in the air. We might get nothing that we asked for at the end of all this.
It's looking that way.
I also read that apparently in this U.S.-led invasion, U.S. and Israel joint invasion of Iran or a joint attacks on Iran, the U.S. did not prepare by securing its bases in the Middle East to the extent that troops needed to go stay in, like, hotels.
Yep. I saw that too.
What?
No. Like, it is half-assed.
It is
the most pathetic. I mean, and this is nothing against, like, our troops. God bless. Keep them safe. Like, they're doing what they're doing. But, like, this is, like, what Trump did is such an embarrassment.
I mean.
Like the most expensive. What could have happened in America with $29 billion? Where not everybody. A month ago, people were like, well, poor America. They keep voting this guy in. What a bunch of knuckleheads. Now they're like, fucking go on with your bad self. We're not helping you out of this mess. Enjoy yourself.
Did you see the cover of The Economist?
No, I didn't.
The cover of The Economist says, never interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake. And it is 100%. A picture of the president of China and the president, Donald Trump. The president of China is in focus. Donald Trump is not in focus. I mean, who benefits more from this than China?
No, and 100%.
I mean, and now China is more trusted on the international stage than the U.S.
Yikes.
Can you imagine? It's so, like, can you imagine being a foreign leader and being like, okay, what am I going to do? Like,
imagine the group chat with all the other foreign leaders. I mean, like, just making fun of us. And that was the other thing. I mean, on Tuesday, Iran just kept taunting Trump, making fun of basically Taco. Like,
it was Taco Tuesday. He needs to stop scheduling these deadlines on Tuesdays because it's just too easy for us to be like, okay, Taco Tuesday again. It's ridiculous. It's like, I also think, you know, I've heard some commentary on this, people being like, oh, well, he doesn't, you know, he's damaging his credibility. And it's kind of like, what credibility did
There's no credibility left.
There's no credibility left. But at the same time, it's like we have to take it's exhausting and terrifying at the same time.
Right. Well, because you can't, because, you know, I have friends who were born in Tehran. And that's nothing that happened yesterday is a joke to them. It's not a funny meme. It's not Taco Tuesday.
People died. Like 165 people in a school, most of them children, died because the official line is we were given faulty targeting information. But who knows if that's true? Like, who knows if that's true? I don't think that Trump and Pete Hegseth have any sort of morality that would prevent them from killing a school full of girls. I don't. And as for, like, the cost of the war, Alyssa, can I run a theory by you? And this is my opinion.
Okay, I'm ready.
This is my opinion, and this is allegedly. I got to hit the allegedly button and opinion button. Allegedly opinion.
Allegedly.
Allegedly opinion. Allegedly opinion. First Amendment, okay?
Yeah.
I think a lot of what Donald Trump did before he was the president involved money laundering. He was in he was in real estate, which is a business that lends itself really well to money laundering. It is he was involved in some shady business deals in like Azerbaijan. He was involved in a lot of places where it's like, wait a minute, there, all this money was poured into this thing, and what happened to the money? Like it was that sort of a situation.
For sure.
He was good friends with Jeffrey Epstein. Also, a money launderer.
Money launderer.
Like, I feel like there was, it's sort of like walking like a duck and quacking like a duck, right?
Correct.
I think that there are things that Trump is doing as president that we're like, why is he doing that? And the answer is money laundering, again, but just from an official position. I think that war and the cost of war Defense Department contracts are a way to funnel money to people that he wants to funnel money to. Whether or not they're actually building something, whether or not they actually cost what they supposedly cost, is like up for debate. Like, the Pentagon has not succeeded in passing an audit in God, how long? I don't know how long.
I don't know.
Ever?
I don't even know.
Ever? Like, how we're funneling money into these places and being like, okay, it costs like $gajillion googly goggly dollars. Like, that's fine. That's how much it can cost. And like, I feel the same way about like ICE detention centers, which we'll get into in a second.
Right.
But there was a story that came out recently that really struck a nerve with me. It just was like, huh, it just kind of stuck in my head. There was a warehouse at one of the proposed ICE detention center sites that a few years ago was purchased by like a shady Russian like billionaire type.
Right.
And the US government purchased it from him for tens of millions of dollars more than he'd bought it for recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, money laundering. Like, we're not going to build, we might not actually build these centers ever.
Okay. You want to hear money laundering?
What?
Do you know the story of the Trump Library in Miami?
No. Money laundering?
Wait for this.
Okay.
So we saw a couple weeks ago the big, like, the video he did with the weird, the building that looks exactly like the Freedom Tower in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Trump Library. It's going to have event space, blah, blah, blah. So a couple of reporters, wish I could remember who they were, dug deep. And it turns out, Aaron, that the land that was on, that it's proposed to be on, was part of the Miami-Dade Community College system that Ron DeSantis gifted it to Trump.
Okay.
And they're going to build what essentially will be, everyone speculates, loads of commercial space on top of it. They estimate I think it's like 2 to 3 acres of land. They estimate its value. It's downtown. It's like, it's prime real estate. They estimate it's worth between $75 and $200 million.
That, okay. Another thing that reeked of money laundering to me, Alligator Alcatraz.
Oh, yeah.
They were like, oh, we're building, it's costing $a made up number to build this thing. And it was a bunch of like tents and outhouses. And like signs and people like Benny Johnson standing there like a doofus wearing his dumbass hat. Like it just to me is like, this guy has this long career of doing things that are money laundering adjacent or look a lot like money laundering. Why wouldn't he continue?
That are loose at best.
Right. Why wouldn't he continue to do that in his official capacity? I think that the ICE, again, my opinion, and I'm just going off of information that kind of like stuck in my head. Sort of like, you know, when you're in a relationship and you're like, I feel like this person is cheating on me. And then you turn out to be right because when you look at their Instagram follows, it like glows.
Yeah.
I feel like this just like stuck out to me. I was like, why is this information like sticking with me about the cost of this facility and how much it was purchased for and then sold to the federal government for? And then I was listening to Rachel Maddow talk about ICE facility protests the other week and how large the facilities are supposed to be, like bigger than the biggest prisons. And I was like, oh, these numbers sound made up. These numbers sound made up and maybe they're never ever supposed to actually be built. Maybe the government is just going to purchase the facility.
Entirely possible.
And never actually build them. And if they build them, they get some bonus human cruelty and suffering, which they feed on anyway.
It's a win-win for them.
And so, and I also think like, and this is a way for them to sell this very obvious, like corrupt act to people who are hateful dipshits who are like, that's fine. As long as you're doing racism in it, it's fine with me. Like, maybe time will prove me right. Maybe time will prove me crazy. But I have a feeling, I have a tingling spidey sense that that is what is going on. I don't think the Trump ballroom will ever actually be built. I don't think it was ever intended to be built. I think that
I agree with you. 100%.
And I don't think that I think maybe Trump was told that it was supposed to be built, or he's carrying around talking about it all the time because he wants to hide the true intention of it. I don't think that most of these ICE facilities are ever going to be built, but I think a lot of money is exchanging hands, like a lot of money is exchanging hands. And I think in a couple years there's going to be a big New York Times investigation that's like, where did it go? We don't know, huh?
It's, well, I mean, considering at this point, only a year and change into his term, loads of people assess that he's $1 billion richer. I think you're right.
Yeah. Well, time will tell. Like, again, like I said, time will prove me right or time will prove me insane.
Right.
And I welcome either diagnosis because I'm tired of living in this uncertainty. Am I right? Am I crazy? Who even knows? We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about ICE. Hysteria is brought to you by Article. Article makes it effortless to create a stylish, long-lasting home at an unbeatable price. They offer a curated range of mid-century modern, coastal, and Scandi-inspired pieces that not only shine on their own, but also pair seamlessly with nearly any other Article product. This thoughtful design approach makes it incredibly easy to mix and match, helping you create a space that feels cohesive and stylish. Article takes great care in curating its collection, focusing solely on high-quality, meaningful pieces that will stand the test of time. There's no filler. Every item is chosen for its craftsmanship, design, and lasting value.
You can immediately tell the difference in quality when you receive an Article piece. Erin, how are your Article pieces doing?
They're doing great. I checked on them all this morning before I came in. They're all super happy in the space. They all look great. They all seem like they're fitting in. Everybody's doing a great job mixing and mingling with each other. The quality is great. Like, the outdoor couch is still holding up so well years
and
later.
And you've had that for years.
I've had that for years. I love my dining room chairs. I like sit in them to work. I prefer it to my desk, actually. Yeah, everything's great. No notes.
Article offers fast, affordable shipping across the U.S. and Canada with options for professional assembly if you prefer a hands-off experience. Have a question or need help with your design choices? Article's customer care team is available 7 days a week, offering knowledgeable support and even free interior design services to help you get your home just right. With Article's 30-day satisfaction guarantee, you can shop with confidence knowing that if you're not completely in love with your new furniture, you can easily return it. This peace of mind ensures you can invest in your home without hesitation. Article's offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim, visit article.com/hysteria, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/hysteria for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. Hysteria is brought to you by Smalls. We're both cat ladies. We love cats. We know what it's like to deal with scarf and barf, kitty weight management, and itchy fur.
Scarf and barf, is that a term?
Oh my God, we always say scarf and barf.
That's so funny.
The food you feed your cat can actually make a huge difference when it comes to feline health. That's why we love Smalls. Smalls fresh cat food is protein-packed recipes made with preservative-free, 100% human-grade ingredients you'll find in your fridge, and it's delivered right to your door. Since switching to Smalls, I've noticed fewer hairballs, silkier shine, less stinky poo. Cats use protein as their main energy source. More protein means more fuel and sustained energy.
Forbes ranked Smalls the best overall cat food, and BuzzFeed says, quote, "My cats went completely ballistic for this stuff. So stop serving your little carnivore a bowl of processed shortcuts. For a limited time, because you are a Hysteria listener, get 60% off your first order plus free shipping and free treats for life when you head to smalls.com/hysteria. That's 60% off your first order plus free shipping and free treats for life when you head to smalls.com/hysteria. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that did not expect to be called to ride into battle for California First Lady Jennifer Siebel Newsom. But hey, sure, why not? We'll do it.
Leave her alone.
It's so funny. She's clearly the new, like, right-wing enemy du jour. And I'm not sure what they think they're going to get from that. You know?
Don't know. Do they care? I think they just like being mean.
Can I just say something that is cunty?
Always.
I think that Jennifer Siebel Newsom looks how a lot of women on the right are trying to look. She looks like that naturally. Yes. Like she is naturally a beautiful person.
I think
person.
That's a fair assessment.
I interviewed her on the – we interviewed her on the pod.
Yes, we did a couple years ago.
I was stunned by how like classy and gorgeous she is. She is gorgeous. And so I think it's kind of strange that they would be like, check out this dumb lady and like bring to attention how poised and classy yeah. and articulate. She speaks Spanish. She's bilingual. Like – She's
done like a million different professions.
She's a gifted filmmaker. Like yep. all of these things about her, it's like, do you really want to be making this lady, this like really
punching
cool
above
lady?
Your weight?
Yeah, this doesn't make sense.
Check yourself.
You're drawing attention to your own shortcomings by like trying to get down with Jennifer Stephen-Lewson.
Yeah. We're going to get to those people later.
Yeah, we're going to get to those people later. But first, we're going to get to ICE. I wanted to talk about this story just to keep it front of mind mm-hmm. that ICE are lying liars. Like if ICE ever gets official uniforms, I hope that the bottoms are sprayed with flame retardant because they are liars, pants on fire, right? Thank
Pretty
you.
Bad.
Thank you for tolerating that joke. Back in January, an ICE agent shot and wounded Julio C. Sosa Silas, a Venezuelan immigrant in Minneapolis, just a week after they shot and killed Renee Good. I remember mm-hmm. this. It happened at night. There was like, oh no, here we go again. Like they yep. shot someone else. It was really scary. I mean, it's horrible that they shot him at all. People initially thought he was dead. It was a scary time for everybody, especially people in Minneapolis. DHS claimed that Sosa Silas brutally beat the agent with a shovel and broom for 3 minutes before they opened fire on him. Sosa Silas and his housemate, Alfredo A. Alhorna, faced federal charges. Christy Noem accused the two of them of attempted murder, but the charges were dropped in February after two agents had appeared to have lied under oath about what happened. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Huh, that's so weird. How do we know that? Well, Alyssa, the whole incident was caught on camera, a city-owned camera at a nearby intersection that showed that the feds were lying about fucking everything. Everything about this encounter was a fucking lie. According to the footage, the alleged confrontation was seconds long, not minutes. There was no sustained attack with a broom or a shovel or anything. According to the New York Times, the federal government had access to the footage within an hour of the shooting.
Wow.
They didn't review it for 3 weeks after the filing of charges. So,
yeah.
Does this sound familiar? It should, because it is.
It does.
Because we have seen ICE agents lie over and over again mm-hmm. about violent altercations, and it's almost formulaic, because you know these people aren't smart enough to lie on their own. It's almost like they got a book of Mad Libs, where it's like, ooh, did I shoot someone? Did I hit them with my car?
Right.
How can I fill in the blanks to make some shit up, to smear the person that I just hurt? How can I just do it? It is formulaic. So we've discussed on the show the story of Mari Martinez, mm-hmm. who was shot 5 times by an ICE agent. The agent lied and said that Martinez rammed her car into his.
Right.
But there was footage. Footage that shows.
There's always footage.
There's always
if you look.
Footage. In an age of like the panopticon of like digital surveillance, there's always footage. For good or for evil. Like there's always footage.
Also, just watch Law and Order. There's always footage.
Well, Martinez did not ram her car into his. It was actually him who rammed his car into hers. And then he jumped out of the car acting like a total goddamn psycho, started firing. He hit her 5 times. Later, text messages that were released showed that he was texting the group chat being like, hey, boys, I put a bunch of holes in this lady. And like they were like, congrats, my man. Like so pathetic. Loser
Gross.
Behavior. And then he lied about it. He lied about
if
how
you're
scared.
So proud.
He lied about how scared he was. He was so scared,
of
Alyssa.
Her car being used as a weapon, which never happened.
Which never happened. They also lied about Renee Good and
yep.
Alex Preddy, both of whom were killed, shot and killed on camera. There
yep.
was there were multiple angles.
Like clear
of the
as day.
And Megyn Kelly, you know, call back to the cold open. Megyn Kelly was one of the people who was like, she was turning her car. And it was just like, shut the fuck up. So far this year, at least 46 people have died in ICE custody.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those deaths weren't caught on camera, or we haven't seen the footage.
Right.
God knows what is happening to them. And I think it's really important to remember ICE. Mm-hmm. I've never seen an agency or a group of people lie as habitually and clumsily as ICE.
I mean, with impunity. Like, the dumbest. It's like they didn't even try to Google a good lie. Do you know what I mean? Like, there is nothing. Because Aaron, it's what, April? Mm-hmm. What's ever happened to an ICE agent?
Yeah. I mean,
there's no accountability. No one's been
looked at weird. People were mean to him.
Well, I think someone was put on like paid leave.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
Christy Nome rode her rented horse to battle for them. You know what I mean? She was like,
right.
I will do, you know, these people are, it's just disgusting. These people have no morals and yeah.
No oversight, no accountability.
Yeah. I just want to know, have they ever told the truth about anything? Like, I can't think of like
an— Not that we have seen.
We haven't
seen all of the examples that have been made public, they were found to have lied.
It's like that old brain teaser that's like, there are two doors. One door leads to certain death. One door leads to the way out. There is one guard in front of one door that always tells the truth and one guard in front of the other door that always lies. You have to. You can ask one of the guards one question. What is the question? Like, I really feel like they're the ones that always lie. That's it. It's ICE. They're the ones
that
always lie.
I mean, that's what we have come to. That is the truth. Like, that is what we have seen. When there have been incidents that we learned about, it has come out, if not in the moment, but eventually, that they lied.
Yep. And they're not very good at it either.
And we don't know their names, Aaron. We don't really know the people who have lied.
Yeah. There's a few. Jonathan Ross, we know.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what's interesting? I was listening to, God, I've been trying to like dissociate by like hyper associating. Do you know what
right.
I'm saying? Like I'll try to like dissociate from the current events by being like, okay, what's some context I can get to understand this? How can I how can I have as much information as possible about this and then maybe I'll feel better about it?
I've been listening to food podcasts about water.
Okay. Well, see, that's probably healthier. I've been listening to
different avenues, same intention.
Totally. I've been listening to the Rest is History podcast series on the KKK. The history of the KKK.
A lot of parallels.
And I've heard a lot of people compare ICE to the Gestapo. And, like, I don't know that much about the history of the Gestapo. They are, like, a paramilitary group, whatever. But I feel like if the more I learn about the history of the KKK, the more I'm like, that's ICE.
Absolutely.
That is, like, how I feel like ICE and the KKK have so many things in common.
Well, especially in, like, the late 1800s and early 1900s.
Yeah. Totally. You know, the second clan. That's
yes.
The second.
Oh, is that what they call the second clan?
Well, there's been three clans. The first clan was the one that was like in the immediate aftermath of the Civil War.
Right.
And now I'm in the episode about the second clan, and the second clan has a lot in common. But it was like—
The second clan was around Prohibition.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
They were like temperance oriented. And
right.
Weirdly enough, they were very moralistic about like— Mm-hmm. like monogamy and sexuality. And so it's very interesting. So ICE isn't like that at all. I think they're a little bit like whatever. But in terms of the way that they're organized and the impunity with which they operate, it's super, super interesting.
Right. Like they were like, they're like kind of like quasi law enforcement, especially back then. Like there were states that actually sort of like deputized certain states, like Indiana, I think.
There were whole counties that the Klan, like, ran.
Where they were just like, go ahead, and they were masked. Mm-hmm. You know, they were, like, well hooded, you know, as compared to ICE. But no, it really, quasi-law enforcement.
Yeah, acting in ways that, I mean, I know that ICE is a government agency and they're receiving government money, but I feel like it feels like the KKK and ICE, what they have in common is that people who are in ICE are almost drawn to it for the, like, fraternity of it. Like, they want to hang out with other dudes that like to do violent stuff. And, like, they don't really care. They just want to be cruel and mean and awful and feel powerful because they don't feel powerful because they're too stupid to be cops. And I think that, like, something similar was going on with the KKK. They wanted—
Well, and the modern Klan recruits— people who have come back, veterans who have come back from wars abroad. Like there was a huge surge of Klan recruitment after Iraq because they had like camaraderie and brotherhood like over there and came back and they were lonely. They didn't have money. Mm-hmm. The Klan was like, we'll be your family. We'll be your community. And that's how they had like a real recruiting surge back in the early 2000s.
Yeah. And it goes the other way too. Like far right groups encourage people who are members, like aspiring members of the far right group, to join the military, to receive military training, come out. That was like, that was a big thing after Ruby Ridge. Another thing I've been studying a lot because I'm insane. I have a new book
Maybe I'll go do the Branch Davidians next.
I mean, Jonestown. Jonestown is another good one to get into.
We had
Caroline is nodding with just
Congresswoman Jackie Spears. Remember, we had her on. Yeah. She was at Jonestown.
She was shot. She was shot and her boss got killed.
Yeah.
Trying to leave Jonestown. No, America's got this long history with like violent cults, paramilitary groups. And I think that on one hand, it's true that like we are living in unprecedented times and we shouldn't lose track of just how precarious our situation is. But everything we're living through now, I feel like history can be a little bit of a guidebook. Like what happened then when something kind of similar was happening? Did they solve it? Did they not solve it? Why didn't they solve it? What should they have done? All right, Alyssa, we've got a Tony Gonzalez update.
This fucking guy. So it's been a few weeks, Aaron, since we talked about this disgraced congressman who dropped out of his competitive Republican primary after admitting to an affair with a staffer who later died by suicide in 2025. Even still, he refused to resign and is set to carry out the rest of his term through January. I cannot believe this, Aaron.
He's still in Congress.
This was repellent, just that.
Yes.
But there's more. So new messages were obtained by the San Antonio Express News, and they revealed that he pursued an affair with a subordinate years earlier during his 2020 campaign. Though the two never got physical, he repeatedly asked her for sex and explicit photos over text, and she rejected him over and over. At one point, he requested nude photos more than a dozen times in 3 days.
Okay, pause. This dude is married. Okay, first of all, disgusting behavior.
He's a fucking predator.
First, it's disgusting behavior regardless of his own marital status.
Married with like six kids.
Married with six children. Mm-hmm. Married with six children, and this is how he's acting? He's bullying a person working on his campaign into sending him nude photos. And the woman who died by suicide was like in a mentally fragile state also.
Yes.
Like her surviving husband has come out pointing out like how fragile she was and how terrible the experience was. And the text messages between Gonzalez and the staffer who died by suicide are very bullying. They're awful.
They're disgusting.
Pushy. They're predatory. And she is trying to rebuff him.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. Ladies and men, but ladies, if it is happening to you, you are not the first and you are probably not the only.
Like this, such a good point.
This is what these guys do. It's never a one-off. You're never, and even if you feel special, you're not. You're not special.
Nope.
This is what they do. They do this over and over and over again until and if they get caught. And even if they get caught, sometimes they pretend that they're sorry and then they pick it up again the next time somebody decides to give him a chance and give them another job. Anyway, this is – he's fucking disgusting. I can't believe he's a sitting member of Congress.
He's a predator, and it is insane that the Republicans in the House are just like, yeah, he's bad, but the majority is razor thin, so he can stay.
I mean
– it's so – like Mike Johnson – how can you be like how can you be a religious man and tolerate someone so unchristlike?
I mean, he's too busy monitoring whether or not his son is using his phone to jack off to really pay attention to whether or not the people that he's in charge of in the Republican caucus are bullying staffers into sending nude photos.
This is like Gonzalez is the hill you want to die on. Like, it's so...
What an awful, lumpy, ugly mid-hill.
Predator.
Predator.
Predator. It's like, do you remember the show To Kill a Predator? To Catch a Predator.
I wish
Chris
it was
Hansen.
To Kill a Predator. Look.
How funny would that be?
I am bloodthirsty, Alyssa.
I know you are. I can feel it over here.
To Kill a Predator would be funny.
If Chris Hansen busted him on To Catch a Predator, the House GOP caucus would still be like, I mean, but did he?
Does Chris Hansen care about America? Because we do. If Chris Hansen cared about America, he would let Tony Gonzalez go. Now, I mean, it's like, it is such a testament to how far gone the soul is from the GOP, that they're willing to excuse this behavior and just turn a blind eye to it. Can you imagine if you had to work with this guy? Can you imagine if you were a staffer for another member of Congress and you were a woman? I would be deeply uncomfortable sharing a workspace with this
person. He should be isolated.
He should be in a, like, Hannibal Lecter style straight jacket.
That's exactly what I was picturing, for the record.
And I think in one of those, in that cage, like Hannibal Lecter in that scene.
No fava beans and Chianti for him.
No, but women should be allowed to throw tomatoes at him. I think tomatoes are fine. I think we should be able to.
Because they're acidic?
No, just because they stain. I just think, like, they're very dramatic. They're a dramatic thing to have hit you on the face.
They are. And they are, especially if they're rotten.
Yeah, like rotten, like soft rotten tomatoes.
Like mushies.
Yeah. He deserves it. Also, like, how? Girl, Tony Gonzalez is what? Mrs. Tony Gonzalez, leave that man. Leave that.
Leave that man.
I will start a I don't care who you are or what your ideology is. I will start a GoFundMe for you to leave him. Take your kids and go. Save your children.
He's a predator.
He's terrible.
He's not someone who had an affair. Fucking predator.
He's a predator. If he has any daughters, like, the disconnect between men who act this way, who move this way through the world,
yeah,
and the fact that some of them have female children. Not that you should only realize that women are human beings when you have a female, like, but to have a little girl that you are taking care of in your home and you're raising, and to treat women that way, like, how can you not see that's someone's daughter? You're doing right. that to someone's daughter. You're doing that to, what a piece of shit. Like, I'm going to go throw a tomato at him. It was me. I did it. Take me to jail. I will get immediately bailed out by hopefully his six
by
kids.
Me. Or I the get GoFundMe. Bailed out by or, you.
Alyssa will
I mean
be,
by me.
She'll be driving down to D.C. to bail me out of tomato jail that I got thrown in for pelting Representative Tony Gonzalez with tomatoes. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Catholicism.
Awesome.
Hysteria is brought to you by Fatty 15. Healthy aging is very important to me, given the alternative, especially.
Right. We'll take it.
Yes. I would prefer to not wake up every day in unfathomable pain. So I like integrating daily habits into my routine that helps support my goals. That's why I'm so excited to share with you guys C15 from Fatty 15, the first emerging essential fatty acid to be discovered in more than 90 years. It is an incredible scientific breakthrough to support our long-term health and wellness. And you guessed it. Healthy aging.
Fatty 15 co-founder Dr. Stephanie Van Watson discovered the benefits of C15 while working with the U.S. Navy to continually improve the health and welfare of older dolphins. Based on over 100 studies, we now know that C15 strengthens our cells and is a foundational healthy aging nutrient, which helps to slow aging at the cellular level. In fact, when our cells don't have enough C15, they can become fragile and age faster. And when our cells age, our bodies age too. This eventually led to studies finding the first new nutritional deficiency in 75 years, called cellular fragility syndrome, caused by a lack of the C15. As many as 1 in 3 people worldwide may have low C15 levels and cellular fragility syndrome.
Thankfully, Fatty 15 repairs age-related damage to cells, protects them from breakdown, and activates pathways in the body that help regulate our sleep, cognitive health, and metabolism. By replenishing our cells with the crucial C15 nutrient, Fatty 15 effectively repairs cells, reverses aging at the cellular level, and restores our long-term health and wellness. I have a no-ugly jars policy in my house. I've got too many. Well, because so many things are just like, it's a given. This thing is going to be ugly. This OTC medication is ugly.
Yes.
Anytime I can avoid it, I avoid it. I love it.
Yeah.
I know it sounds superficial, but Fatty 15 comes in a beautiful reusable glass and bamboo jar, and refills are shipped right to my door. So it reduces waste. It looks nice. It's sitting there and it reminds me,
to use it. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. The jars that stay on my counter are the ones that end up on my face.
Absolutely. Get that on a throw pillow. Fatty 15 is on a mission to optimize your C15 levels to help support your long-term health and wellness, especially as you age. You can get an additional 15% off their 90-day subscription starter kit by going to fatty15.com/hysteria and using code hysteria at checkout.
This episode of Hysteria is brought to you by Wild Grain. Wild Grain is the first bake-from-frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, artisanal pastries, and fresh pastas. Unlike many store-bought options, Wild Grain uses simple ingredients you can pronounce and a slow fermentation process that can be easier on your belly and richer in nutrients and antioxidants. Plus, all items conveniently bake in 25 minutes or less with no thawing required. Wild Grain's boxes are fully customizable. In addition to their variety box, they have a gluten-free box, vegan box, and a new protein box. Erin, I just made my Wild Grain last night. I had the pretzel rolls.
Ooh, how were they?
Delicious. And they come, I can just make one if I want to. I just like pull it out, put it in the oven, had some like egg and tuna with it, like had like a weird little salad with a delicious pretzel roll with it.
I love that. That's such a good idea. I never even thought to do that. Like,
yeah.
Well, thank you for that amazing wild grain tip. Imagine having fresh bakery quality bread, pastries, and pasta at home without any trips to the store. And don't just take our word for it. They have over 40,000 five-star reviews and have been voted the best food subscription box by USA Today 3 years in a row. For a limited time, Wild Grain is offering our listeners $30 off your first box, plus free croissants for life when you go to wildgrain.com/hysteria to start your subscription today. That's $30 off your first box and free croissants for life when you visit wildgrain.com/hysteria, or you can use promo code Hysteria at checkout. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that's questioning whether New York's hottest club is really Catholic Mass or if it's just the only club that Evie reporters could get into.
Now, that was funny.
Yeah. That is funny. I can't take credit for that one. I think Claire wrote that. Or did Caroline, did you write that?
Claire wrote that one.
Yeah, that's a pretty good – I didn't change anything. I was like, nope, leave that one.
It's good.
It's good. So the Catholic Church seems to be getting some astroturfed PR. I mean, I've seen a handful of stories across a handful of publications over the last few years that's like, actually, it's cool to be Catholic now. It's cool. Look at all these trad Caths. They're swarming Mass in San Francisco. They're barging down the sacristy doors in New York City. They can't get enough of that Eucharist. They are they are guzzling the blood of Christ. And yes, you know, I like the woke Pope. I'm a cradle Catholic.
Love the woke Pope.
I'm a cradle Catholic, born and raised. Went all the way through. I did all the sacraments, except I didn't get married in the church, and I didn't do the sacrament of holy orders, which is when you become a priest or a nun. I didn't do those two.
Wow.
But okay. I did all the other ones. I did Eucharist. I did confession. I did confirmation. I got baptized. Like, oh, and I guess I haven't gotten anointing of the sick is the other one. That's for when you're dying. I haven't gotten that one.
I mean, thank God.
Yeah. I don't want to get that one. You can.
No.
You can miss me with that one.
No.
But I've gotten four of the seven sacraments. And okay. Like, and I like Pope Leo. I think that he's been a very...
He's vibes. He's good.
He's great. I like that he's from Chicago.
Modern.
Like that he likes pizza. I like a lot. I like he's a basketball fan. Like he's just a cool America Pope.
He's relatable.
I liked Pope Francis too. I know that would like rankle the trad Caths, but I really liked Pope Francis.
No, but he was like, you know, he was like the first modernish.
He was cool. Pope.
Yeah, he seemed nice.
He seemed nice. Yeah.
I met him.
You did? Francis?
I did.
Wow. What was he like?
Mm-hmm.
Old?
Very nice.
Oh, that's great. I mean, I would hope he's nice.
No, I mean, it's like, it's kind of like the most, no, here's the thing. I met the Queen, met the Pope. He is the most intimidating. It is the most intimidating setting of any place I've ever been.
Why? Because is it like a big clean room and
it's so and no. It's like you go through some catacombs and it's just like, you know, it was just like the six of us or whatever, and you're going through the catacombs and it's like beautiful art and you're just surrounded, and then like you're brought to this room and they open the doors and just like there's the fucking Pope. You know, it's like you can't. It's like one of those times you're like, I can't believe
you feel like you're just
I was there. Second only to the time I almost got left in the Kremlin and Rhodes had to come get me.
Wow. That's another story for another time.
It's a good story.
Yeah. I mean, so here's the thing. We've got a cool America Pope. We've got possibly a PR campaign. I mean, I believe that the Catholic Church probably hired some like PR people to be like, here's our new angle. Here's our new angle. Like,
I mean, if not now, then when? Right? Yeah. I mean—
Well, last week there was a handful of tweets about packed services, long lines, whatever. And of course, EV Magazine ran with it, running the headline, NYC's hottest new club is Catholic Mass. Subhead, there's a new hotspot taking over and there's no cover charge or VIP section in sight. Yes, there is. As a cradle Catholic, yes, there is. There is a cover charge. You are expected. They pass around a plate. That's the cover charge. You're expected
to donate. That's exactly correct.
VIP room. It's called the Vatican, bitch. It's called the Vatican. It's
what
called
dummies?
The choir. It's what called the dummies? Choir loft. It's called the people. It's called the altar kit. I was an altered girl at my church. Yeah.
But you were really cute.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Well, they let girls be altar girls before the Vatican said it was okay because there weren't enough children to only have boys do it in my church.
Well, yeah. There you go.
So here's the thing. So there's this story that's like, oh, Catholicism. There was a lot of people in the kind of like Red Scare, Dime Square group that converted and became Tradcath. And it's like, are you doing this ironically? And now they really are like serious about being Catholic. Candace Owens is very serious about being Catholic. She's got that sculpture behind her all the time.
Oh, yes, correct.
And she talks about being Catholic all the time. She converted. And so that's why she talks about it so much, because converted people just can't fucking shut up.
Well, if you put all that effort in, I kind of get it.
It is a lot of effort to convert. As an adult, you have to go through all of these classes. They are really serious about it. It's not just like if you want to become a Quaker, you just show up and you're like, I think I want to be a Quaker. And they're like, okay. Like, it's
I know.
It depends on like what meeting you go to. But like, generally speaking, you could just show up and be like, I think I want to hang out with you guys. And they're like, that's fine. That's it.
Have you watched The Testament of Anne Lee?
No. Is she a Shaker?
So it's the Shakers, not the Quakers. Yeah. But I think that it was excellent. You would like it. And it's streaming now.
Oh, we've talked about, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I'll definitely have to watch it. But yeah, to become a Catholic as an adult requires like a lot. So if there are a lot of adults converting, that is noteworthy because people are deciding to go through this whole process to become a Catholic. But here's the thing. There were lines in packed services outside of Catholic churches last week. It was Holy Week last week.
I was going to say.
It was the week before Easter. Palm Sunday to Easter Sunday is when all the
high season,
all the bangers, all the song bangers are played. We got Crown Him with Many Crowns on Palm Sunday. Absolute banger. We've got Jesus Christ is Risen today on Easter Sunday or Easter Vigil Mass. Absolute banger. All of the Easter hymns are bangers. And I think they're better than the Christmas songs. I'm just going to say.
They're more soaring.
Yes. And the vibes, right? The vibes of a
See, even I know the Easter songs.
Right. And the vibes at a good Catholic, like at a beautiful big Catholic church during Holy Week.
10 out of 10.
Incredible. Especially Easter. There's flowers everywhere and light. And I think in a lot of places in the Northern Hemisphere, it's like the end of, it feels like
the
end
of winter. So they showed up to the Super Bowl.
Yes, they show up to the Super Bowl. I actually thought about going to Catholic Mass last week for the first time in like years. And I was like, should I take Juniper? My older daughter was like, should I take her? Because it's like pretty, you know, the music is interesting. I think it's important. I'm not planning on raising her like any religion, but I think it's good for her to be exposed to religion so that she can make a choice about whether or not she wants to espouse a faith when she gets older. Like, I'll support her in doing that unless it's like a weird one. But I thought about bringing her, and then I was like, you're crazy. I think that there is something right now in the air that is making people that I know that were raised Catholic that are no longer Catholic think about going back. And I think it has to do with the Pope. And I think it also has to do with, like,
hard times.
Hard times, yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
And a desire for, like, authentic community, even though it's, like, a flawed place to form a community because of, like, you know, centuries of corruption and abuse that flourished in the power structure of the church. But I also think it's a testament, if there is an uptick in Catholics that are young, I think it's a testament to just how much the, like, modernity has failed humans how it's failed to meet people's needs.
Well, I mean, I'll just tell you up here, I don't go to church, but the attendance at trivia bingo at the local library is through the roof. And it's like people just want to do something nice together.
I mean, there was that German trend last summer that was like pudding mit fork or something like that.
What's that?
Pudding with fork. People were just showing up places and eating pudding with a fork in large groups. Just
nice.
Showing up because people just want to do something real and hang out, even if it's like absurd.
There are cookbook clubs popping up all across the country.
Mm-hmm. Running clubs are the new dating apps.
People love to talk about their running, so it's kind of like the Catholic Church.
Yeah, it is. But I think that like the bigger headline here is not like, oh, people are getting religious, because I do think that there are some, you know, I do not buy that in my hometown and my dusty, rusty old church, there are 25-year-olds flocking to Mass wearing veils and being like, we know Catholic Church better than you. We converted. You know, I don't think that that's happening. I think that they're kind of cherry-picking churches in like San Francisco and New York and places that are a little bit more trendoid.
And have iconic churches.
And have beautiful, iconic, yes, yeah, places, spaces to be in. Although the church that I went to is very pretty inside.
I'm sure.
It's the only architecturally interesting thing in the town. It's like, right, mid-century modern. It's very pretty. But I think that it's not about religion. I think it's about a lack of community and a feeling of like a lack of spirituality in the world. And there's like a spirituality that feels like it's not trying to aggressively sell you something, like, you know, like yoga in a lot of cases. Right, you go, right, and you feel, right, like, okay, well, I don't have the gear to do this. Like you can show up to a Catholic Mass. And right, you can just sit and enjoy the music and listen. If you show up too many times, they're going to like expect you to like go to confession or, you know, contribute to soup and sandwiches. But it's not to me about God or religion. It's just about like a lack of community.
Yeah. No, I agree with you totally.
Here's who I wouldn't want in my church if I went to a church. Pam Bondi. If I saw her.
She got kicked out of the big church in D.C.
I would be like, get out of here, Pam. Pam got shit canned last week and will no longer, yeah, be attorney general. Oh. Let's hear it for the Herstory. She's the first female attorney general to ever be fired.
Glass ceiling. Shattering.
Shattered
all over
the place. The glass ceiling, Pam.
Go, Pam.
Shattered the glass gutter. But seriously, it was only a matter of time before we were going to say goodbye to Pam. I think you and I predicted this when Brandi Zadrozny was on to guest when you were out. And she predicted this. Like, I think a lot of people that have their fingers on the pulse of the Trump administration or have been paying attention for long enough, we're like, well, it's going to be a woman. The women are going to get shit canned first.
And it's going to be Pam. I mean, his original selection, let us not forget, was Matt Gaetz, who would have been, Trump specifically wanted someone who would be fucking unhinged and totally untethered to any semblance of law, like law and order. And Pam was never going to succeed. Like, she was never gonna do right by him because, like, she's not our cup of tea, but she was, like, qualified for the job.
She was a real lawyer with a real,
right,
law degree.
She'd been AG in Florida.
She had practiced law. She became the attorney general. And she was
don't
more qualified.
Don't let her babysit your dog.
She was, yeah, she'll steal it. She was more qualified to be AG than most of the people in the Trump administration are to be
100%
their respective
any of their
folks.
Jobs.
Yeah, like Kash Patel could arguably have had the mishandling of the Epstein files pinned on him as well because the FBI was responsible for the redactions. They also were responsible for this really cockamamie story that's like, oh,
nobody has done more to humiliate Donald Trump than Kash Patel.
Than the FBI. I mean, yes. Kash Patel's FBI. There are plenty of people who work for the FBI who are like, God, I fucking... There are people that are trying to duck and cover and hold on to their jobs. But under Kash Patel, a lot of really important FBI resources have been redirected to immigration enforcement. Same thing as under Pam Bondi's DOJ. It's only a matter of time before the newly created blind spots in our law enforcement apparatus are exploited by somebody who wants to do harm to Americans. It is only a matter of time because all of these like vacancies and redirections are public information. I can read about it. You can read about it. You goddamn bet your ass that an Iranian can read about it or a Russian can read about it.
When like a week before Trump went into Iran, Kash Patel disbanded the like Iranian counter-intel division.
I mean.
Just saying.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I can't say I'm sad. I'm not going to defend Pam Bondi and be like,
no,
she got sexismed because it's like, girl, live by the sword, die by the fucking sword.
Absolutely.
You joined an ideology that expressly and inherently espouses a belief that women are inferior to men and that women should be subjugated to men and that is promoting an agenda that aggressively tries to restore women in America to second-class citizens that must get married in order to fully participate in society, that must get married to a man in order to fully participate in society. So, girl, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you.
Yes.
All right. Do you think there's anything she could have done to stay in Trump's good graces?
Bye, Pam. No.
She did all the things.
Like, she did what even beyond reason she could have done, you know? I mean, like, she danced with those Epstein files. I mean, there's nothing else. Also interesting, before we started to record today, little bit of breaking news. So, Aaron, part of what we heard about Pam was that, one, like, Trump fired her when they were in the car together, and she asked if she could stay till summer, and he was like, sorry, but no. Well, it turns out she was supposed to testify on the 14th of April about Epstein.
In front of a
House oversight, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
Now she can't testify because she's not the AG anymore. The DOJ put out a statement being like, no, nope, she's not the attorney general anymore, so she will not be testifying. Todd Blanche, who is the acting AG, you know what he said when Trump asked him, or he was asked about whether he wanted to be attorney general, not just acting? And he said if Donald Trump asked him, he'd be honored. But if not, he'd be like, I'm paraphrasing, but he did say the words, I love you. If he's asked to go back to being the DAG, the deputy attorney, he'll just say, thank you and I love you, Donald Trump. And he said, I love you, like in front of reporters. It was so weird.
That's so weird.
Like, it was like, I was like, oh my God, that's so corny. Like, he's so
I love
cringe.
You?
I love
saying
you.
Saying I love you to the president?
I love you.
That's your boss.
He's like,
can
I love
imagine
you.
If I, can you, I was just imagining running into the guy's office and be like, thank you, I love you, like.
Thanks, love you. No, it's so weird, but that's like, you know. But,
what?
But like, that's like what's expected,
that's
you know?
That's so strange.
Like, I think he panicked, but knew that that was probably closer to the right thing than not, you know?
It would, if you were like, thank you, you're awesome. Thank you, you're awesome.
Thanks.
Oh, good Lord. Well, here's the thing about Todd Blanche. I mean, there's also been talk that Judge Jeanine might be stumbling
into
that role.
Could you imagine?
I could. I think that Judge Jeanine is a worse lawyer than Pam Bondi, and so she's less likely to be able to carry out Trump's insane legal demands than Pam Bondi was. Because Pam Bondi at least was like, all right, I'm trying to figure out how to do these crazy things. Like, I'm trying to figure out how to prosecute.
She's better on TV.
Yeah, how to
she
prosecute.
She dances better on TV.
Right. Well, she could have at least been like, okay, I'm trying to figure out how to prosecute Jim Comey. How can I do that? Like, is there something I can do? She at least knows some laws and she, whatever. I feel like Judge Jeanine would just like get on TV and yell.
That's what she, yeah, I mean.
But you know what's fun about,
she's an effective yeller.
I hope that Judge Jeanine gets it because I would love to do this fucking guy on her because there's so much good footage.
We could do one, she doesn't have to be AG
no,
for
but
us to do that.
There's so many more important fucking guys we need to get to.
Like, it's true.
If she were, please Donald Trump, make Judge Jeanine Attorney General. All right, bye Pam. Who do you think's next?
Who do I think is next? Well, like of the women that are left, I mean, Susie Wiles better buckle in.
Didn't Susie Wiles, who are her enemies in the like inner circle? Are she in Miller close or does she just sort
no.
of like, okay.
No, so. Remember in the profile, she kind of did him dirty. She said, you know, that he was like kind of out of control and stuff.
Yes.
He's been suspiciously quiet.
No, he's not been suspiciously quiet.
Really?
Every time anything is said about immigration by anybody in this administration, you can see Stephen Miller's lips moving like he's a ventriloquist. Like you can see.
Fair enough.
And I think that Mark Wayne Mullen, you know, if you look closely when he talks, you can see Stephen Miller's hand up his butt making his mouth move.
I had forgotten about him.
Yeah. Mark Wayne Mullen, who used to be a plumber and lied about being – or didn't lie. He misled people into believing that he had served in the military when really –
Oh, right. He just served.
I mean, I guess
– Now he's the head of Homeland Security.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that nice?
Wow.
Isn't that nice?
You have to assume Cash gets gone at some point.
Cash, I think.
He's humiliated.
He's such a dork. Like the emails that came out from his personal email, like there's all these pictures of him like with cigars and being like, such a cornball. Like he's such a dork. But, and I talked about this, I think it was on, I don't know if it was on Only Friends or Rapid Response, but I went on with Alex Wagner last week. Mm-hmm. And I suggested, and I still believe this the more I think about it, that Donald Trump's best move strategically, if he wants to help his numbers that are in the toilet and put the blame for something on somebody else, would be to like heave ho Hegseth.
Oh yes,
that would be the strategic move where it's like, you know what, this Iran war
Easy.
Didn't go well. Get out of here, Pete. I'm gonna have a G.I. Joe figurine be the Secretary
right.
of Defense now or whatever. I don't think he's gonna do that because Pete Hegseth looks too much like a guy that Trump thinks should be the like a general. He looks too much like he's from Central Casting.
Yeah, it's like the hair.
Yeah, the hair, the like bat, gray face, the
whole
like
thing.
Prancing around on stage being like, we're on an important mission. It's like
his Fox News weekend training has come in He's adapted his weekend news behavior, and now he's
down to the time that he tried to throw an axe at a target, missed the target, and hit a member of the military. I feel like that, in a way, is a bit of a metaphor for the Iran quagmire that we are currently in. It was essentially
what a mess.
The wartime equivalent of Pete Hegseth on a weekend, possibly hungover, who's to say, throwing an axe at a target and hitting a member of the military band.
I will say, when he stood up this morning in his press conference and proclaimed that Trump chose mercy, I was like, I mean, it
was
like a full— Is
mercy the name of a stripper?
It's, you would think. That's a good— That's. I wish you were a White House reporter at the Pentagon.
I don't. And I have a story to tell you about that possibility being floated for me like many, many years ago. And I was like, that's terrible.
I mean, it is. It would not have played up to your strengths, which just sitting there and listening to people and then writing about it, no shame to anyone who covers the White House. That's not really. It wouldn't have been your beat, but it would have been fun to hear you ask the questions that, like, I know you would have asked.
Oh, thanks, Alyssa. That's really nice. Well, let's talk about the fact that Donald Trump seems to have a woman problem, which is a total shock given that he's had a woman problem for his entire life.
Well, Aaron, it's not just Christy and Pam. The swing towards conservatism may be including women, but they certainly are getting the short end of the stick. We need to check in on our trad wives. How are trad wives doing?
Well,
yep. So last month, there's an actual study. UNLV led a study that was published in the Sage Journal Psychology of Women Quarterly.
Ooh.
And it found—
I'm a subscriber, are you?
No, I'm not. Oh, I'm still waiting for my EV magazine.
Me too. I'm waiting for that sex issue.
Where's the sex issue?
It's never going to come. For it. Much like an EV reader. It's never going to come. Okay.
And your chicken's never going to brown.
Yep.
Okay. So the Sage Journal found that men who have higher levels of hostile sexism are more likely to support the tradwife movement compared to other men. Who'd have thunk it?
Wow.
Who'd have thunk it?
This lifestyle that young women are being sold as romantic actually involves you subjugating yourself and becoming completely financially dependent on a person who hates your guts.
Hates your guts. The study also found that the men who support the movement don't respect the women doing the domestic work. They're like, whatever. The scientists said these individuals also begrudge and derogate the women who fulfill traditional roles because at the core of their worldview is a belief that women use sex to manipulate, control, and undermine men's power.
Okay. Guys.
I mean.
If you are such a slave to your boner that you are furious at half of the world's population, you're the problem. Control yourself. Develop a level of control of yourself. Take responsibility for yourself.
Yes.
Why is that women's problem? Because they don't want to have sex with you whenever you want to have sex with them, but also you hate them.
And then you hate them because sex.
Yeah, like—
And you don't respect domestic work.
It's like, get a robot. Just get a robot and a fleshlight and leave us alone. Like, oh my God. Here's the thing. I think that trad wifery is being sold to young women and some women that are like, you know, between, I would say, 25 and 50 who are like married and have kids. It's sold to us like liberals don't respect the important work of motherhood and keeping a home.
100%.
But I would push back and say that I think that that is where feminists and these, like, whatever trad wife apologists come together. I think that the work of homemaking is essential. I think that it is so noble and important and indispensable, and all of society would fall apart with it. The work of being a mother, like, it's not like, and I talk about this on the pod a lot, but it's not like I wouldn't be happy or fulfilled if I hadn't become a mother. But now that I have kids, I consider— They're my first priority. They're the most important thing in my life. And if I do a bad job at everything else, but I do a good job raising them, then I will consider my life a success because it is so important to me. These two little things completely depend on me. They annoy the crap out of me, but they depend on me entirely. And the work of motherhood is like dignified and important and valuable. It doesn't matter what your socioeconomic status is or your marital status. The work of caring for children, motherhood, but, you know, parenthood, but specifically motherhood, nurturing. I think it's incredibly important. And I think that it has been devalued and downplayed and treated like it doesn't matter. If we did care about it and if we valued it, we would have paid parental leave. We would have
absolutely.
We would have better maternity care. We would have we would actually treat it like it is valuable work, but we do not treat it like it is valuable work. And the party that treats it like it has the least amount of value are Republicans who don't believe that there should be some sort of government support for this essential work. Women make every person, every single person was made in the body of a human woman. And without that, society completely collapses.
And they take care of most of the people.
Right. Exactly. And when their parents get old, who's taking care of parents? It's not
nurses, it's teachers.
Nurses, teachers, the daughters of the elderly. It's care work is devalued by people on the right. And I think the tradwife movement is very cleverly trying to be like, oh, your work as a mother is important. And feminists don't think that being a mother is important. Yes, we fucking do. I think it is it is obscene to me how we devalue care work in this world. And it is so predictable to me that men who subscribe to the tradwife belief, they want women to be compelled to stay home and compelled to care for children and compelled to be housewives and compelled to not work outside of the house. I find that to be incredibly disrespectful because they don't actually think that it's valuable. They think that women are just born servants to them.
That's exactly it. I mean, that's the bottom line.
And yeah, it's gross. I mean, but of course, the tradwife thing was always a lie. It was always kind of a gauzy romantic thing. It's like the sort of fiction that people sell people that don't know any better, right?
Right. Like the tradwives you see on social media, they're pretty wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually trying to make money a lot of times when they have their accounts and stuff. And they're selling something that a lot of time you're like, do you really do that all on your own or do you have – help so you can be a tradwife on social media.
Yeah. Some of them do, some of them don't. And I think the ones that don't seem really sad. Like Ballerina Farm, apparently.
Oh my God.
She seems very deeply sad. I also think
they're bad raw milk.
And the romanticization of rural life.
Right.
Two people who probably haven't ever had to work on a farm or live on a farm. Guess what? Rural life is gross. It is gross. There's a lot of dead things that you end up having to clean up. There's a lot of poop. There's a lot of fencing, a lot of poop. Your hands get all hard because you're working in a garden. There's dirt, there's bugs, which is I love working in a garden. That's fine. But I think most people who think that they want to live on a homestead, it's you don't want to do this. You truly don't. It takes a very specific type of person who is geared toward this.
Hardy.
Yes. And you have to be okay with being alone for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. You have to be okay with having hours that make no sense and having to wake up at 3 a.m. because a calf got out and you got to chase. You know, there's things.
Right. There's no choice.
There's no choice. It's kind of gross. There's a lot of death. It's not comfortable. It is not a comfortable, soft focus life.
It's not a gauzy.
No.
Everyone sits down at 5 and has this 10-course meal and no.
Whenever I see pictures of a tradwife type fashion shoot where it's somebody wearing peasant tops.
The most uncomfortable clothes.
Well, but they're in a field and it's my first thought is you are getting ticks, girl.
That's 100%. I'm oh my God, that tall grass.
You've got to wear pants. You've got to wear pants. And they've got to have, they got to be tight around the ankle. Girl.
Erin, if you see me when I go outside, I look like a beekeeper. My pants are tucked into my socks. I have a hat. You don't have flowing hair. Ticks get in there. That shit is secured in a bun. There's a hat on.
Yes.
It is hilarious to watch because it's content.
You are
it's not
on Lyme
real.
Disease superhighway, chicky.
You're gonna get the hydroencephalitis or whatever that bad one is, anaplasmosis.
Yes, you're gonna get bullseye shaped sores,
yes.
And it's over. It's over.
That's
your brain's gonna be broken forever. Put on some pants. You're in the weeds.
It's outrageous.
Also, the idea of picnicking in a field. It's not there.
Never on a table.
Oh, nobody
where
knows
the grass has been cut.
Are we hyper empaths? Are we like thinking too much about these? I mean, I just...
No, no, Erin. I think a normal person who has ever lived outside of a city would look at them in the tall grass and think ticks.
Yeah, you're going to get ticks. You are going to have to go through every inch of your body, armpits, like every crevasse, and make sure there isn't a creepy crawly there. Because otherwise you could get a tick. It's gross.
Yeah, good.
It's gross. Okay, going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sani Petty.
Hysteria is brought to you by Jones Road Beauty. A life-changing discovery for me is that I actually prefer to show off my natural skin rather than cover it all up. I mean, just take a look. Look at this face.
Gorgeous. Today.
I don't want makeup to erase my face. I want it to bring out the features that I love. That is why I'm obsessed with the Jones Road Beauty Miracle Balm. It actually enhances my skin instead of masking it with layers of makeup. It replaces multiple steps in my routine, and I use it as a highlighter, bronzer, blush, and lip tint. It's the ultimate no-fuss multitasker. No brushes, no complicated routine. I just use my fingers and go to get that my skin but better glow in under 60 seconds. And yes, I use it before every Hysteria recording. It's right here. So you've all seen it in action.
The best part of Jones Road Beauty, all of their products are actually good for your skin. Every formula is packed with skin-loving ingredients. All Jones Road formulas are clean and high-performing, free of PEGs, EDTA, BPA, or a whole lot of other things I can't pronounce because clean beauty is a no-brainer. Jones Road doesn't just have their famous Miracle Balm. They've built a full lineup of effortless skin-first staples like their Just Enough Tinted Moisturizer, a lightweight, non-comedogenic formula that smooths an even skin tone with a soft touch of coverage. Hides redness, looks natural, and feels like nothing on your skin. Jones Road Beauty also just launched their Lip Recharge, your next holy grail. It's a powerful lip treatment that refreshes, smooths, and hydrates on contact while nourishing lips over time. It delivers the comfort of a balm and benefits of a treatment and the soft shine of a light gloss in one effortless step. It is dermatologist tested and available in 9 versatile shades.
If you want makeup that brings out your natural glow instead of hiding it, Jones Road is the way to go. For a limited time, our listeners are getting a free shimmer face oil on their first purchase when they use code HYS at checkout. Just head to jonesroadbeauty.com and use code HYS at checkout. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for Usha Vance fans. After this, head right on over and listen to Usha Vance's podcast. She's
yikes.
She's really prematurely Michelle Obama-ing, I think.
And like, you've really got to be Michelle Obama to try to be Michelle Obama.
Yes. I, at the very least, not be married to somebody who is like openly hostile and rude toward Michelle Obama. There's something so gross to me about how cruel and awful the right was to Michelle Obama when Barack was in office.
Mm-hmm.
They were awful to her. And then the second Republican gets in office, everything is like a lesser copy-paste from what Michelle Obama did.
You know, they tore up that garden.
They tore up that garden and now it fucking sucks. Like, they did, oh, let's move. Oh, we don't tell us to fucking move.
No nanny state. Don't tell us what to eat.
And then it's be best and eat healthy. It's like so lame. And it's like the vibes of saying something in a meeting, getting ignored, and then somebody repeats it and they're like told it's good. And Usha Vance being like, I am just like this gentle fairy godmother and I read children's stories. It's like, no, you don't.
Why would she do this?
Why would she do a storytelling podcast?
Just is such, like, she's about to have a baby. Like,
she
just
is about to have a baby.
You're a mom. You're like, you don't have to do this.
Yeah,
you know, like,
you've got a lot on your plate.
You have other stuff going on.
You've got a lot on your plate. I think that she, I really think that there's something kind of changing over in the Vance camp that is like, okay, we're prepping to take over. There's something
clearly
in the last like couple weeks, especially, there's been something that shifted where it seems as though they're positioning JD to be the president at some point by taking over for President Trump, whether or not Trump is 25th or whether he is 86th.
He is ready.
He's ready. And I think that my first clue was all the stories where clearly J.D. Vance was the source about J.D. Vance being opposed to the military action in Iran.
100%. And then made sure he was in Hungary, far away, and with plausible deniability should anything have gone down.
He's in Hungary touting Viktor Orban right now, who is in danger of losing an election, who recently to stage a false flag terror attack.
Yeah, bad guy.
Yeah, he's not good. He's not a good guy. But Donald Trump has tried to model his leadership style after Viktor Orban, but he keeps skipping steps. Like, Viktor Orban, like, loosened up credit and took control of the central bank. So people were like, I like this guy. And then he took power. Donald Trump tried to do that, and people were like, no. And then he just tried to proceed to the next step anyway. And it's like, no, 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 no. You need to affix the two IKEA pieces together before you put the screw in. You're just putting screws into the side of a board.
It's like, don't, don't.
This is not going to be a shelf at the end, sir. This is not how you build a totalitarian government. Listen to the stick figure, man.
But that's Vance is learning.
But Vance, I think, is learning. And I think Vance actually has the patience and soullessness to follow the playbook.
Totally.
I don't think that Vance is in it to be on TV, and Donald Trump has always been in it to be a star, to be on TV. And I think that Vance is putting well-placed inputs to news stories. I think that New York Times story that's like how Donald Trump was tricked into the Iraq war that just ran on Tuesday, I think that was a pretty obvious example of it. And I think Usha Vance is like, I'm the first lady. I'm a Disney princess. Like,
well, it's like she's finally, like, she was miserable before, but now maybe she's seeing the forest through the trees and she's like, I'm ready for my close-up.
I think they're like, you got to get in front of these cameras before you're on mat leave.
Probably.
But like.
That too. But have you even noticed he's got like a different look?
Oh, he's Zempicking. He's on the Zemp.
He's trimmer. His suits are tailored. Like when he did that press conference,
Here's the problem. He's on the Zemp, and he is, if he's not careful, because of the way that his face is built, he's got a fat boy face.
He'll look 100.
It is going to droop.
Yeah.
It's going to droop shortly. Like you have to be very careful if you're on your 40s. And you're going to take something that is going to remove fat from your face because you're going to get a droop. You got to be careful.
Unless you do it nice and slow. And I will say that his new look feels quite sudden.
Unfortunately, it is not stopping his hairline from receding, which is happening before our very eyes. But
he's
is
turning
close.
Into the garbage pail kid we know he was meant to be.
Yes, but he is close to Turkey, so he can get a little hair transplant if he wants to.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see when he comes back.
If he's got like a full
like Jordan from Dad Talk.
Yes.
I know you don't watch.
Ross. He's got a Bob Ross.
Oh, yeah. Bob Ross is so funny.
Yeah. All right. Before we get into Sani Petty, some announcements for the class. Last week, the Supreme Court heard arguments in Trump versus Barbara, a birthright citizen case so legally unserious, it might actually force this court to do the right thing for once.
On this week's Strict Scrutiny, Leah Littman and Melissa Murray break down the chaos inside the courtroom, what the justices were really signaling, and why a ruling against Trump could hand SCOTUS a credibility boost it definitely hasn't earned. They also get into the sudden exit of Pam Bondi and what her messy tenure at the Department of Justice leaves behind. Tune in to Strict Scrutiny now wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.
Now let's get to Sani Petty. I've got a sanity corner, Alyssa.
I'm ready for it.
Well, you've already heard about it, but I really want to share it with everybody. So my two-year-old is really getting into her emotions. Like her personality is really coming out. She does this thing where she gets really mad and she'll like do something. She'll scream and then she'll maintain eye contact to be like, what are you going to do? And I'll usually say, oh, you got so mad. And that usually calms her down because I like identified the emotion.
Right.
But anyway, her latest thing is she has become fixated on a potato. There's a potato that she loves that she carries around. It's a russet potato. It's a baked potato-sized potato. She cradles it. She carries it with her blankie in one hand and her potato in the other. And she will, like, watch Frozen holding the potato. She wanted to take the potato in her crib the other day, and I was like, no, the potato can't go in there. The potato lives on the kitchen table when you're not playing with it. But she took it in the car. She loves this potato. And why do I buy my children toys?
You know, the potato, it was there. She probably associates like a kind of like a big girl thing. She sees you with the potatoes. You buy the potatoes.
Oh, yeah. I'm always running around with a potato.
You've like always got a potato.
Yeah.
And
everyone knows
like,
that about
this
me.
This is my thing. She's like, now I have a potato.
I think that's probably right. She's probably seen me like cooking. I'm on a real big potato kick. But I think she also likes the weight of it. I think that it feels like
– I mean, I've seen the pictures. Yeah. It looks perfectly sized.
Yeah, she loves –
it fits right in the little crook of her arm.
I know, yeah. Well, the potato is getting a little bit puckered. It's not like a bad potato.
I'm waiting for it to sprout.
It's – we're going to eventually have to replace the potato. And I'm concerned that it's a just this potato thing and that there is no replacing the potato. But TBD, it is so funny. Like, it is so funny and silly and sweet.
It's hilarious.
And that is my sanity corner this week, is my two-year-old has a potato and it's her favorite toy.
Please keep posting.
I will. I will.
Because the story of the potato is it's perfect.
Yeah, and she asks for it by name. She's like, where's potato?
Potato.
And she wants me to, okay, we're going to go find the potato. She went in the kitchen the other day. She goes, potato, where are you? And I was like, oh, we'll find the potato. And then we went and found the potato. But yeah, she's loves the potato.
You can, here's the thing, Erin, I just have to say, you can never feed her that potato.
No. Okay. No. Yeah, that would be a Kenneth the Page type situation. Claire's laughing. She knows what I'm referencing. All right, Alyssa, sanity corner or feeling petty this week?
Sanity corner.
Okay.
So you mentioned it last week. You were like, you love this podcast called Love Trapped, and I take your recommendations very seriously. And so I spent Easter weekend in the Subaru driving around listening to this podcast.
It's so good.
It's fucking perfect. It is a great podcast. I cannot wait for episode 8. The thing that's a little crazy about it now, there's so much that's crazy about it. But in the world of Donald Trump, so this is a podcast about Clayton the Bachelor and a woman he has a long drawn out legal battle with. I won't spoil it for everybody. But the thing is, she's so crazy and lies so much. That in the era of Trump, that part was like a little startling because like you believe it. Like there are people who are just like now like, yeah, I can just like lie and get away with it. Like that's, it's like unfazed. Like she just like the lawyers come at her and she doesn't blink. Like, I mean, not blink, but I picture her not blinking. But I just needed something that like sucked in all of my attention. And I just listened and listened and listened. I was on the treadmill. I like always watch Ina when I'm on the treadmill. I muted Ina, watched Ina, but listened to the podcast because I'm like, I can't miss this opportunity of being alone to like not listen to this episode. And like I have not had like, you know, obviously I love The Pit, but like there are not a lot of shows that are like capturing my attention and I don't want to be on my phone. And so anyway, I loved it. I recommend it. Love Trapped. Anybody who needs to dissociate. Enjoy. It's fucking great.
The host's name is Stephanie Young, right?
Yeah.
I think we should probably try to have her on because we've had – this is two consecutive Sani Petties.
That – yes.
She's
– yes.
She does such a good job. Like the,
she does such a good job.
The writing is great. I mean, I know that this is like inside baseball, but like the writing is really, really good. It's well edited. It's well paced. They're like extra episodes that are sort of like, these are things we cut from the other episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And they make, they're like.
I listened to those too.
Bite size. Oh, it's so good. Everybody should listen. I got a thank you email from a listener that was like, thank you for recommending this by. It's so good. It's so addictive. If you ever want to.
It's great. And like you and I always joke that we're not the same, but we have like a Venn diagram where we overlap. Mm-hmm. This was definitely it.
It's really good. Okay. Yes. I'm glad that it has been so. It is my sanity corner that my recommendation was well received and it's bringing you happiness.
I knew it would, but it exceeded my expectations.
Amazing. Okay. That's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Alyssa Mastromonaco, thank you for being my ride or die. Listeners, if you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com is the way to do that. You can drop us a line there. We're also on the socials, but hysteria@crooked.com is, my inboxes are absolutely
messy.
Messy, 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 messy. There will be more Hysteria for you next week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Aaron Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Claire Fogarty is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Claudia Sheng. Matt DeGroat is our head of production. Adrian Hill is our head of news and politics. Kendra James is our executive producer of culture and entertainment. And thank you to Daisy Cruz and David Tolles for production and marketing support every week. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.